We are reading Parshat Shlach this week, where Shlach means to send, and it's, in fact, we are learning the story of Moshe sending the spies into Eretz Kanaan to Latur et Haaretz, to scout out the land, which is interesting language. Doesn't say to see the land, but it says to scout the land. And we'll talk a little bit about this this concept of sending and Moshe's role in that, Hashem's role in that. Becomes a very, the whole setup of the story is very interesting. It's something that the Midrash is really interested in understanding, and how that affects everything down the line, and how the people react and how the spies react. It all really goes back to this very the very beginning of Shlach Lecha Anashim, to send forth people. Check something here. One thing I don't think comes up in the actual Midrashim, so I think one thing that's worth commenting on to start with is the whole language at the beginning of the story is something that has fascinated Midrashim and Mefarshim. It says Shlach Lecha Anashim. So send for yourselves people. It just says Shlach Anashim. Send people. Why does it say send for yourself? So we're actually quoting, I think it comes from Midrash, and I think it comes up in Tanakhuma, but not in the part that we're going to be looking at. So, Shlach Lecha, so Hashem says, you know, I know what's going to happen. I know it's not going to be good. So I don't think it's a good idea, but if you want to send the people, then send them. Now, there's this discrepancy, because in Dvarim, it says that the people approached Moshe about going. So the question is, was it Moshe's idea? Was it the people's idea? But it seems to discount the notion of it being Hashem's idea. But that only reinforces sort of the whole, if we're going to try to understand what went wrong and what happened, that everything went so downhill so quickly. So a lot of this comes back to whose idea was this in the first place? Because in theory, if everybody trusted Hashem that this was a good land, so there would have been no need to send anybody. Maybe we might say, as I don't remember who says this, but there's one Mefarsh that says that, what was the purpose of sending spies? Because anytime that's the smart thing to do if you're going to go into a new land. So you have to know what it's going to look like, and you have to know the lay of the land and everything. So of course they had to send people. There's a possibility that maybe that should have been done when they're a little bit closer to Eretz Yisrael, but something said for the fact that from a military perspective, there's something smart about that. But in terms of reporting, Moshe asked these questions: is it like good? Is it bad? Like, what do you mean? You trust Hashem, so people shouldn't have had to go in the first place. So there are different reasons we could come up with. Why does Moshe agree to this? Why do the people want this? Or was it Moshe's idea? But I just want to put that out there as something that kind of colors the background of the story as we're going through the Midrash here. So Midrash begins. Let me get the spotlight. Okay. Shlach Lecha Anashim. Zesha Amar Katu. So as usual, Midrash invokes a pasuk from somewhere else in Tanakh. But here it says, Eshtalalu Abirei Lev Namush Natam V'lo Matzu Chol Anshe Chai Yodehem. The stout-hearted were despoiled. So those who were brave and courageous, they become weak-hearted. They were asleep in their slumber, nor did any of the valiant men lift a hand. So Asholu Abirei Lev, the stout-hearted were despoiled. Who's they referring to? Ila Moshe Aaron, referring to Moshe and Aaron. Sheshalcha Maraglim, they sent the spies. Uvava Amru Lashon Hara L'Haaretz. They came and they spoke evil about the land. Okay, and again, that's why I brought in the whole background. The background here is that it's, I don't know exactly where Aaron fits into this, but certainly when the Torah says Shlach Lecha Anashim, so Rashi again says that it was Moshe's decision to send the spies, and because of their initiative, the spies came back and said Lashon Hara about the land, and everything went downhill from there. And not only did the spies say Lashon Hara, the people didn't know what to do. And then Moshe and Aaron themselves kind of gave up and didn't know what to do. So if you look, if you look at the story itself, look at the story itself. So they, you know, they, it says they go and everything, and they come back and they tell everything that happens. And the first person who enters, you know, after the spies give their initial report is Kali, who himself is one of the Meraglim. Question of spies is the right kind of word, but we'll use spies for now. Kali is the first one to speak, and he speaks to the nation in Moshe. Where's Moshe and Aaron in the whole situation? You know, what happened to them? And it comes, you know, if we look back to last week's parsha, Moshe is already, you know, having issues because people are complaining about food and meat and everything. And Moshe is ready to give up on all the people and says, you know, I'm not a babysitter. I'm not a caretaker. He has a particular mission, but there are moments where Moshe has a difficult time reacting to the people. And later on in the story, it's not quite here, but as the reaction of every of the people escalates and gets more dramatic and more panic comes, at some point it says, "We pull Moshe Aaron up, and Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces." The fall on their faces often refers to tefillah, and you know we consider tefillah to be a good thing. I didn't look this up before the shiur in terms of this context, but Rabbi Tzvi Grumman has a book on Moshe and his leadership. And he comments at various points about how, you know, when Moshe falls on his face, it happens a few times in the Torah that Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces. And that maybe implies tefillah, but also implies a certain level of passivity and not being able to really, not really being able to react and to step in and to assert themselves. They have to retreat and fall on their faces. So Moshe sets up this mission and becomes a disaster, and he doesn't even know what to do.
A few years ago, I spoke about why Moshe was not allowed into Eretz Yisrael, and my theory was it wasn't necessarily the striking of the rock, but it was the incident of the spies, that he didn't show sufficient leadership, and that the striking of the rock, that was his chance to redeem himself, and he blew it.
Right. That's an interesting thought. I think there's some interest that I remember learning earlier this year that actually takes the reason why Moshe didn't enter the land until, you know, even back to Mitzrayim. But so, you know, that's certainly possible there. Because the big question then is like, why didn't Moshe step up? Was he afraid? Or but anyway, so Midrash goes on to say, Miyat Amar Kalev Vishite Kolatan Ha'Uchlasin. Kalev stood up and he hushed the people, he quieted them down. Never vayas Kalev to Amel Moshe. Kalev silences the people. Yeah, it's a little interesting here, and could look for answers, but just now put out the question that the people actually didn't react when the Torah doesn't record a reaction of the people when it says that Kalev quieted down the people and he silenced them. So the spies have given a fairly neutral report. This is what we saw. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. There's some pretty strong people there. It's a fairly neutral report, and then all of a sudden we see Kalev is silencing people. So obviously there was some sort of reaction, but kind of it sort of begs the question, you know, what have people been saying? Obviously people looked a little bit concerned. Maybe there was some sort of implication. Right, so Sephorno says here that the Kalev was quieting people because there was murmuring going on. Right? Maybe it wasn't the full out panic, but you know, Kalev saw that people were a little bit uneasy. So it's Kalev who steps in and tries to soothe everybody. He stood on a bench. It's kind of hard to imagine, like, you know, like what did it really look like when Bnei Israel were kind of like, were they always like together and, you know, and the constant projection. We talked to him talk about this, but you know, Kalev sort of stands up on the stage and he's quieting them down. Hush, hush. And they listen to hear what he has to say. I'm going to do something that's a little bit interesting I've never done, and I hope it's effective. But I'm actually going to come back to the rest of Midrash in a little bit. I want to skip to a later Midrash that comes up, which is not something that I do. But I'm going to rely on a little bit of pedagogical instinct for a second. if I've gained anything this year, and try to insert another part of the story that's important. So there's a later midrash that's quoted by Rashi. It talks about Kalev hushing the crowd, and it says, Amar lahem ani machem be'etza achat. So Kalev had tried telling the spies during the mission, now I'm really with you. He didn't portray himself to be any sort of naysayer. It's not like they gathered together. On the way back, they didn't have a whole conference saying, okay, like, who's in favor? Let's take a vote. And Kalev was like, I'm in favor of going in. Everybody else is like against. That's not how it was. I mean, we don't really know what the spies really intended the situation to unfold. Again, it's not so clear that from the first report that they were even trying to be negative. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But Kalev, makes it seem like he's. There, I guess there are indications in the Midrashim that already early on there was kind of a sense that the Baragim were going to go in a certain direction, and Kalev made himself seem like he was going to be with them and like them, which makes sense. If anything, let's keep going. So he says, so he would say, from one side of his mouth, that was, I agree with everything he's saying. But in his heart, he said the truth. I brought him backward according to what was in my heart. My brothers that were with me melted the people's heart. So Kalev had the truth in his heart. Kadosh Baruch Hu testifies to this. Kalev had a different kind of spirit. He was different. When the spies return, so they assumed that they could trust Kalev, that they were going to know that he was going to share the same message as them. So Miyana Malav Safsal, again, Midrash mentions that he stood up on a stool and he's like commanding everybody's attention. And he says, "Okay, Kalev speaking. Everyone listen, Kalev speaking, right?" The Shittik and Kol Yisrael, they want to hear what he has to say. They were already going against Moshe, and they thought Kalev was going to give them ammunition. They asked Kalev to Am El Moshe. Kalev hushed the people before Moshe. They thought that he was going to give them something juicy, he was going to give them ammunition, so they were quiet. So Patach Amar, Alona Leve Rashio Takiachonu Kalev. No, we're going to go up and we're going to conquer the land because we can do it. That wasn't part of the script. That's not what the Meraglim expected Kalev to say. And that's not what the people expected him to say. That's why they listened. Right? Miyak Shashamu Kachal Kokinagdo Ba'amru Lonu Chalo Lot El Amki Chazaku Menu Yotzi Dibata Arza Sher Tarota. So then as soon as they heard him, so they start, they're against him now also. That they say, we're not going to be able to do it. They're too strong for us. And they started spreading the slander of the land. But right, obviously, the thing that the Midrash is picking up here is if Meraglim had an agenda that they were going to spread something negative, so I could have called it taking the floor. They would have either tried to kill him, which hopefully they wouldn't do, but in theory, they would try to do something to prevent Kalev from getting up there and saying things that was not on message. The only way Kalev was able to do it was by pretending that he was that he was with them. But in order to get there, he had to be a little bit two-faced to get to that point. So it served a particular purpose, right? So this is what our Midrash is saying, that so Meraglim are starting to spread negativity. Moshe is passive. We don't really know why he isn't saying anything. Thinking a little bit, Moshe wasn't there. He's never seen the place before. So what's Moshe supposed to say, right? I can't say I saw it and everything's fine. I would have to imagine that he had a certain faith, obviously, that Hashem was going to be to protect them. But why are the people going to listen to Moshe? He wasn't there, right? So Kalev is the one who steps in and has to say that. No, he says Toba Art Be'ol Me'on. The land is exceedingly good. It's very, very good. So Amar Lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Hakadosh Baruch Hu. This goes back to the previous Midrash. I'm exceedingly grateful to Kalev. Kalev was different. So mazulati, What does the word zulati mean? Zulat means like, means acceptor, means other. So, but the Midrash interprets it, zeh lazeh oti yiter v'yeter mishishim mikem, that he was better than 600,000 of all of you. Right? One person was better than 600,000 of you. So, atam lo metatem yidecha ma'elan yidrash altem. You didn't do anything helpful. You were indecisive. So, lachan ne'mar sh'olulu abir leif. So, this comes to teach us that Moshe and Aaron were weak in this moment. They became despoiled. So kokach lavel fisha yushluchim tipshin, and all this because the spies were foolish. One who sends a message through a fool is cutting off his own food and drinking violence. Here, this midrash is obviously Moshe and Aaron weren't the worst of everybody here. In fact, they were probably the least of the evil that took place between the Rabbim and the people reacted. But the Midrash here is kind of implicating Moshe and Aaron, that they enabled this to happen by sending people who were apparently a little bit foolish.
Didn't show a proper leadership.
Right. Yeah, and it's not, Moshe, we learned at the end of last week's Parsha that Moshe was exceedingly humble. The connection between this week's Parsha and last week's Parsha, Rashi explains, is that Miriam had spoken Lashon Hara about Moshe, she got Zaraz. So there was actually maybe an idea that, even though Hashem knew that this mission might go badly, that maybe the miraculous would learn Musar, they would learn the lesson of Miriam, and they wouldn't tell Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, but they didn't learn Lo Lakhu Masr. They didn't take the lessons. So that's the connection that we often make. But there's also, it's interesting that it's at that same episode of Miriam getting to rest that we learn that Moshe was exceedingly humble. He was the most humble person on the face of the earth, and that's always like a big conflict that. And I think when we discuss the Mishnah mainly, right, there's a tension between being that Mishnah comes up somewhere in Pirkei Avos. There's a tension between being humble and not taking yourself too seriously and not overly asserting yourself. And at the same time, when the moment calls for it and there are bigger things at stake, sometimes you have to be a little bit out of your comfort zone to step up and to. And to assert yourself and to be vocal, and Moshe has moments where he does that, but again, here it could be I don't know if he was blindsided. I don't know if it's because again he wasn't there, so maybe he didn't really know what to say back. In some ways, Kalev actually really by definition is a more effective messenger. Like, we should expect really Kalev to be the one to be able to testify, I was there and everything's really good. But there's definitely an implication for the fact that Moshe sends Mara. So next midrash I want to look at, and again, picks up on Shlach Lecha Anashim. And it's going to give a couple different perspectives on Meravim. And there is a certain perspective that Hashem knew that everything was going to turn out badly, but there's also a different perspective that we're going to see in this midrash. So Shlach Lecha Anashim Zeh She'amar Ketuv Kachomets L'Shinayim V'Chashan La'Inayim, like vinegar to the teeth and like spoke to the eyes. Ken Ha'atzel L'Sholcha. So is a lazy person to those who send him. So Giborim Hayu Meragim She'im Motziv L'Shon Ara Al Ha'aretz. The spies were mighty ones that spread Lashon Hara about the land. Shemar Vayadrichu Lashonam, they bent their tongues as a boat, falsehood, Kasham Shaker. Mashal Amad Davar Dome, what is this, what can this be compared to? Lashir Shaya Lokem, you have a wealthy person who has a vineyard. Shayro Shayanya, that when he sees that the wine is good, but yeah, Omer Achnisio Dayan Bibiti, bring in the wine to my home. When he saw that the wine had turned vinegar, you bring the wine to your home. So Av Kafa Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shiraz Kenim Ma Sehem Sherim, Karatam Lishmo. when you saw that the Zkenim, the elders, were good people, so he attributes it to his name. Shneimar Esfali Shibs Zkenim. That was last week's parsha when Moshe is feeling a little bit burned out. So so Hashem says to him, okay, gather me 70 people. Right? So it says Esfali for me. Bring me 70 people because these people were sharing, they were good people. On the other hand, when he saw what was going to come of the Meraglim, so Karaotam Lishmo Shel Moshe, he calls them on through the name of Moshe, refers to them through the name of Moshe. Hashem doesn't want to have any association with Meraglim because he knew it was going to go badly. So he associates them with Moshe as well. I mean, they're vinegar, so it's he's sending it to somebody else's home. It's not wine. Another perspective, though. Zeshamar katu mekate raglaim chamashote. So the one who sends a message through a fool is cutting off his own feet and drinking violence. So shaleft varim beyad ksiyo. And there's a pasuk that says somebody who sends things in the hand of a fool. So the midrash asks, "V'chik silim hayum hamiraglim? Were the miraglim, were they fools?" V'lokvar ne'amar shlach lecha nashim. The Torah said to send men. So Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells you, "V'chol makom she'in ish yishtadel liyot ish." I think is the proper quote. Right? Anywhere where you see that there aren't men, strive to be a man. It's not talking about, you know, that doesn't mean man in the human being sense, but to be a leader, to be a person. And the Torah says shachach anashim, said send a people. We're talking about people who are righteous. When it says anashim, send righteous people, send good people. So the people who are recruited for this were assumed to be righteous people. Elsewhere, when Moshe tells Yeshua to help gather people who are going to be judges, so they're referred to as Anashim. The days of Shaul, the man Yishai come to an elderly age among men. So men refers to good people who have strong character. But we're calling these people fools. The one who sends a message through a fool. So they only become to be considered fools when they started to spread the slander of the land. Somebody who spreads slander is somebody who is a fool. People who like to spread rumors are. And sometimes there's something calculated about it, but their character type is obviously foolish. It's not mature, right? There's a certain movie that I won't mention by name, but I saw it in a previous life. So you know, there's a whole story where there was I remember the details. Of the story. So there was something called a burn book, and it was a book that contained all these, you know, disgusting things about other, you know, other kids in the school. So the person who wrote the book burn, here's what happened. The person who wrote the burn book, when she got upset at some of her friends, so she included herself in the book, and then they copied pages from the book and spread them throughout the whole school, so that, you know, she couldn't be suspected of having written the book because she was included in it. But again, you know, she had a plan, and she was manipulative. But the whole purpose of this is obviously very foolish, and it was demeaning. The whole thing's obviously very, you know, foolish thing to do. That's not the way you deal with situations in life, right? So, spreading slander is often something that's characteristic of a fool. So these people were actually, they're great people, and they made themselves to be fools, which kind of suggests, you know, on the one hand, you know, we saw there's a suggestion that at the beginning of the Midrash, it makes it seem like that the, you know, the Meraglim were due from the beginning, and they were vinegar and the like. But at the same time, it's also possible that, you know, it wasn't for a foregone conclusion. Actually, Hashem, you know, the people were saying were actually tzaddikim, and there was an expectation that they were going to come, and it was all going to go well. So the spies are referred to based on the pasuk in Parshat Hazinu, for they are perverse generation, children with no loyalty to them. So what happened was that they were good people, but they lost their loyalty. So maybe it wasn't Hashem's idea to send the Meraglim originally, but the question, you know, that they mentioned that Rashi brings in that same pasuk. So why does it say Shachar Hashem? Why does it say send for you people? But then later on the pasuk says that these people were sent al pi Hashem. We just said that Hashem, it wasn't Hashem's idea. So once you're going to send these people, I'm not going to prevent you from doing it, and I'm going to give you instructions for how to do it and who it should be. So Hashem handpicked these individuals, and Moshe handpicked these individuals, and they're supposed to be tzaddikim. Shekeinu Omer v'yitav b'inai davar. Moshe agreed to it. That was a good idea. V'kach b'kem sh'tim asar nashim yishachal l'ashim. Minai natal Moshe yitzadikim. Tani nor the tzaddikim. Shere Moshe lo ratzal shalcham yidat atzmo. Shanim lach b'akadosh baruch hu kol echad v'amar poni mishel poni. So when they had to pick the people, it's not like Moshe just took any Joshmo and sent them, but he went to Hashem and said, okay, I'm thinking of this person from the Sheva. Do you think that's a good idea? And Kodesh Baruch Hu said, yes. And they went through each of the 12 like that. And of course, some of them were good. Caleb was good and Yoshua was good. And I don't think Moshe would have sent Yoshua. You know, Yoshua is Moshe's protege. Right? So would Moshe have sent somebody like Yoshua with with people who are known to be scoundrels, right? Or Russia, or the Shechina. And it doesn't seem to be a pretty good recipe.
Well, he does say that God should save you from the council of the spies.
Okay, right. So that adds a little color. There's that. And there's color of davening that he shouldn't be included in the deceit of the spies. So, you know, there's sort of room to question it. To what extent, obviously, if he called Hoshea ben Yom Yehoshua because he wanted to save them, so that suggests that there was a possibility that something was going to go wrong. And yet, there's good reason to think that, you know, these people started out as being tzaddikim.
Well, I think Moshe perhaps suspected that this was going to be a fiasco.
Right. Seems like a Kaddish Baruch Hu did also. So there's definitely reason to be suspect. So Midrash finishes. So at the end of 40 days, it says here it was after 40 days that they changed and they turned everything to be troublesome. They caused generation to be afflicted. They're referred to as people, they were tzaddikim originally. So what we've seen in the Midrashim is that there was we saw in the first Midrash that Moshe seems to be blamed, at least by that first Midrash, Moshe is blamed for sending them in the first place. And the Fisha Yushulchim Tipshin and the people who were sent were foolish. On the other hand, there is reason to think that they were tzaddikim, it was only at the end that they soured. It could be, again, the original report was kind of neutral, right? It could be that, you know, they saw things. There's reason to think, like, let's say they saw giants and they were dying and the like. So what did the miracle, you know, there's a difference between seeing and perceiving, right? Seeing is like, you know, when you see directly, like, with your eyeballs, the proceedings, how the brain processes it. So what they saw with their eyeballs were these people that were being, a lot of people being buried, you know, when they were Eretz Yisrael. So they took that to mean that people were dying and being killed and it was dangerous. What was actually potentially happening? It could be that that the wicked among these individuals were dying, so that when they went to Eretz Yisrael, the righteous, really the righteous died. So by the time they would go into Eretz Yisrael fighting, when the wicked would be left, Kadosh Baruch Hu would deliver them into their hands. It could be they just, you know, they got cold feet, they saw things, they didn't know how to interpret it. So that's certainly a possibility. And yet there are indications that that the whole thing was a potential disaster waiting to happen. Because again, you know, if there was real belief that everything was going to be fine, so why do you need to send people? And they were only setting up, you know, they were only sending things up to, you know, to for things to come back. You know, well, what else were they going to say? We were hoping they were going to say good things, but sometimes if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And when things were otherwise fine, to send people in and kind of hope that they were going to come in with some sort of positive report, so that was placing a lot of bets. So something to think about through the parsha and the course of the week and on Shabbos. If you have any sort of insights into, you know, what how to understand the beginning point and the end point of the Marad, then certainly be happy to hear ideas. All right, so have a good week, everyone.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. You too.
Just want to add an addendum to what we discussed at the end of this year. It left us with this question: to what extent the Meraglim were righteous? Were they wicked? There's certainly reason to believe that the Meraglim were righteous, as the Medrash said, that they were anashim, that they were distinguished, noble individuals. At the same time, there are also indications, especially when you read the story with Mefarshim, that the Meraglim seem to have some sort of evil intentions. In some ways, it doesn't make sense, because why would they be appointed? But nonetheless, that that storyline is there. So left us with this question, you know, what is it? Which one is it? What's the balance? So I found a shiur online by Rabbi Shlomo Friedman of Yeshiva Keren B'Yavne. He quotes the Stipler Gaon of Yaakov Kanievsky as explaining the following, that in fact, when the Meraglim were selected, they were originally righteous individuals. However, it was after they were appointed and they realized that they were in positions of power that they became arrogant, that got into their head. There's something psychologically that really can take place there. This was famously demonstrated, and I believe it was the Stanford study, where, you know, individuals in an experiment were appointed to be prison guards in a prison, and it was all acting, and nonetheless, they got kind of caught up in that. So the experiment itself was ethically questionable, or considered ethically questionable later on. But the point is that a person can be in a position of power and can get to their head. So what happened with Meraglim is originally they were Ksherim, but when they set out for their mission, they got this idea in their head that it was their job to sort of chart the course and to report things however they saw fit, and it was all in their hands, when really they were just shlichim, they were just messengers of Moshe and Hashem. So their job was to report in the way that fit Hashem's the mission that Hashem would have approved. But instead, they took matters into their own hands. They were arrogant. They thought they had a right to chart a different course than they were supposed to. So that's one approach. The other approach I saw in Rav Shimon Schwab's Sefer, which I'm going to discuss on Shabbos in a different sense, is that they were originally, in fact, noble, righteous individuals. But there are two types of faith in life. There's the faith where you go through life and things take place and understand that whatever is happening to us, that Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing whatever is best, called the Avid Rahman Alatav Avid. And that's a form of faith that's appropriate for all Jews.
But there's a second form of faith where, for the purpose of doing a mitzvah, doing something for the Jewish people, so one has to put themselves in a difficult situation, a risky situation, even a dangerous situation, and you have to rely on your faith in Hashem in order for it to work well. And the Meraglim were sort of in the second category, that they were put in a situation where they were going to have to do something that was risky, and they were going to have to report on an operation that would eventually be risky. Certainly, the midst of conquering Eretz Yisrael is not without its dangers and its risks. And that's a different form of faith, that you go in knowing that it's risky, and nonetheless, you hope that Hashem is going to provide, or you trust that Hashem is going to provide your protection. Or Schwab says that's actually a higher form of faith. At the same time, it's definitely a riskier form of faith, and not necessarily everybody's cut out for it. The problem with Meraglin was that they were not spiritually mature enough for that stage. And that also explains why Hashem wasn't originally keen on the idea of setting them, didn't commit them, because it was a fraught endeavor, and that's perhaps where the Meraglim soured. So it is possible from both these approaches to see that the Meraglim were originally good people; they were noble people, and yet at some later point, even towards the beginning of the mission, things begin to sour a little bit.